Now, Roger Grafe was the TV producer who pioneered what became known as fly-on-the-wall filmmaking. His subjects ranged across the criminal justice system, town planning, the treatment of children in care, and many more. He even applied his technique to the Monty Python team, as Michael Palin recalls.
I first met Roger when he and a team had been organised to film the first Amnesty International show, which I think was in 1976. And it was the very first time, I think, that I'd ever been part of a fly-on-the-wall documentary.
That's not my pixie. They're hanging to the right.
I turned up with Alan Bennett and Jonathan Miller, who are also in it and all that. No sooner did we open the door than there was a camera there. And you immediately sort of stop and think you have to give an interview. But no, he just wanted to follow you up the stairs.
Yes, he's coming in the taxi later. Bring you my hat.
I wrote in my diary, I found it actually, for that the first day I met Roger. R. Grafe, I've put in my diaryistic way, is a very bright, approachable and likable man.
Get on stage. Can you want to go on stage?
We've got a girl.
We've got to go on stage.
In a bit. His prolonged documentaries are an attempt to involve the viewer without the smooth, glossy aids of well-worked storylines, and rather by presenting people warts and all. His technique begs a lot of questions, but it's refreshing to talk to someone who feels that something can be achieved on TV and is not forever shaking his head sadly and saying, well, of course, it would be lovely to do this, but...
I wish to register a complaint.
The Norwegian Blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it, my lad. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
The broadcaster Katie Derham turned to Roger Grafe for help and advice and became a friend.
Roger Grafe was a polymath. His endless curiosity and his exceptional energy took him down so many different paths. And when you look at the different areas of interest he had, whether it be planning, whether it be child mental health, whether it be prison reform or opera, there was nothing which didn't spark his interest. But the magic of Roger was that it wasn't enough just to be curious and be interested. He'd then go and do something about it. He'd make a film, he'd write a book, he'd get policy changed, because he had this unbelievable compassion and great empathy, I think. And I think he felt that everybody's story was worth sharing.
Roger Grafe was born in New York. He studied English at Harvard University and then began his working life as a theatre director. On a visit to England in the 1960s, he fell in love with the country and decided to make it his home. As he explained, his documentary filmmaking career began as a result of a failure in the theatre.
Well, I had a flop. I came over here, I had a successful play at the Royal Court, and I was just completely kind of carried away with the possibility of, you know, taking Broadway by storm and so on. So I had my first flop, and I was so stunned that having wasted 2 years believing all these promises, I rang up the Thalidomide Society and said, look, can I do something useful with you, because I've just pissed away 2 years of my life, and how about a benefit at the Palladium? And the Thalidomide people said, no, we don't want that. Our kids are about to try and go to school, primary school, and we need the head teachers to understand that they have brains. They may not have arms, I mean, in some cases not even have legs, but they've got brains. So would you make a small film for a small group of head teachers showing that our children can cope?
Brett was born in Australia 4.5 years ago. Now he lives in London, where his father works as an engineer. Brett was born without arms because when his mother was pregnant, she was given tranquilizing pills containing thalidomide.
We felt that rather than treat Brett gently, we should make every effort to treat him as near as possible as a normal child, because he was going to grow up in a normal world where people will say hurtful things.
He had this skill of getting inside previously impenetrable organisations like the police, like the US Senate, like the European Union headquarters or the British Communist Party. What qualities do you think he had that meant that he could get inside these places and persuade them to allow him to film?
He was eminently trustworthy and he trusted his subjects. He was also phenomenally charming and very human and humane. And so I think that people did feel comfortable allowing him into their lives, whether they were in a position of authority in the civil service or the parents of an ill child at Great Ormond Street. I think that he was somebody who had such natural warmth that it felt okay to tell your story. He wasn't trying to catch people out. He wanted to tell the truth, but, you know, he wasn't going to play any tricks. So, of course, that meant that people's doors did open to Roger in a way that they wouldn't open to other producers and directors.
When I started my Access films, the so-called fly-on-the-wall films, I came up with the first criteria that I would use forever, and that is, what would I want to do if they wanted to make a film about me? That's it. Don't ask people to do things you wouldn't do. So we agree what the film is. They can, at any point, say, that's confidential, please switch off, or, you know, leave the room. And they have the right to see it and change anything that is inaccurate or professionally or personally confidential. And you can then decide if you want us to show it or not. And almost no families have pulled out at that point because they've been through a kind of trauma which, if shared, they feel other people will understand.
I became such a great admirer of Roger's work and watched a lot of it because of the diversity of the subjects he covered. He deliberately decided to go for that particular subject, and he did it very thoroughly, and he covered it in a way which no one else was doing at the time. He had a very rigorous sort of approach to try and get to the truth, talk to the people actually there on the ground, not rely on press handouts. He liked to get behind the scenes and get the real voices.
One of Roger's most impactful films was Police, broadcast in 1982 and showing the inner workings of the Thames Valley Police Force. One particular scene in which officers questioned a survivor of rape caused outrage.
People come into the police station and they say all sorts of things. They make up all sorts of stories.
You would make up a story like that, I tell you.
People do, you know. For lots of reasons. What are you telling us, is it the truth?
Of course it is. I wouldn't be here now, would I?
Well, I don't know. There might be an ulterior motive for it. Might be a reason for it.
Such as?
Invariably, it might be a psychiatric reason.
I was in the next room because we make a rule not to outnumber the people we're filming, and I was listening on cans, and because we were shooting from behind her head, we're all her. The whole audience is her. And when they badger her, they do it down the barrel of the camera. And so those close-ups of people, the inspector asking, was she on the game, that kind of thing, is basically, everybody in the audience felt it. And I think that's one of the reasons that film is so powerful, is you never see her. You are her.
Listen to me. I've been sitting here 20 minutes, half an hour listening to you. Some of it's the biggest lot of bollocks I've ever heard. I can get very annoyed very shortly. Now stop mucking us all about.
I'm not mucking you about.
I'm not saying to you as you're lying. What the hell's gone on? If nothing's gone on, let's all pack it off and go home.
I imagine that those police officers might have regretted letting him see what they were up to.
Perhaps they did, but you know, the fascinating thing about that story, and I remember being so interested to hear about it from Roger, was that they didn't realise they were behaving badly. And that, of course, was the power of the documentary. So at the time, they didn't know the effect it was going to have. And you're right, it had an immense impact, talked about in Parliament, not just in here, but around the world. And just quietly, within a year or so, I think that particular police force had created a new rape unit staffed by female officers, and so change was effected very rapidly.
Roger went on to make many more films about the criminal justice system. He campaigned for penal reform and changes to the planning laws. But he also had a less serious side and was one of the instigators, with Richard Curtis, of the Comic Relief charity.
Roger was a hoot. I don't think he could have perhaps done all the serious work that he did if he'd taken himself seriously too. He was an absolute joker and enormously warm and gregarious company. He always used to talk about the fact that his ADHD was a superpower because it meant he could spin so many plates. And I have to say, I've never known a busier man with more interests.
He had a great smile most of the time, Roger. It wasn't a sort of broad smile. He wasn't a nudge-nudge sort of character or anything like that. But he just had a nice smile, which is the smile of someone who is enjoying what he's doing, enjoying being with the people that he's working with.
There can be few documentary makers who can say, as he could, that he genuinely changed the way things went in the areas that he investigated.
I think that it was a source of great pride to him that some of his films had direct impact on policy. It really did change a lot of different elements of our world. He's made an enormous difference to the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, whether it be in the prison system, whether it be in hospitals, whether it be in the police force or being victims of crime. He really made an enormous difference.
He created a way of making programs and a way of talking to people and listening to people and finding out information about people, which no one had done in quite the same way before. He then applied that to an enormous number of different areas. He believed, you know, in finding out what people really thought and representing their views. And those were views which may well not have been shown on television before. And I think he just produced a body of work which will stand unmatched, really. I shall miss him. There's no one quite like him.
Michael Palin on Roger Grafe, who's died aged 85.